You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. A bit of a damp few days, but we've now had six rounds of the County Championship in mid-May, and so lots of the potential England players for the first test on the 2nd of June have had plenty of opportunity. Of course, it's going to be an interesting choice of players for that first test, with so many people unavailable and one or two injuries knocking around as well. So on this show, we're going to have a bit of conjecture about who England might pick and the sorts of runners and riders in that England squad to be announced over the next couple of days. We're recording this on Monday morning. Also, we'll look at Jofra Archer and the story about his continued problems with that elbow injury. And later on, we're going to hear from Alan Lamb, a little clip from our virtual cricket club last week, talking about life on the road with Beefy and the rest. I'm actually going to spend this week up north doing more interviews for our World Cup documentary, this time with Ben Stokes and also Joe Root. So I'll be in the sort of Durham area, which will be quite a nice experience, back at where I both went to university and also played cricket for a couple of years. I just love Durham as an environment generally. Simon, you've been a bit deprived, I suppose, over the last few days, weeks, because of no IPL commentary.
Yeah, I was down to do a lot of IPL work, especially in May. So I'm really looking forward to the first test coming up at the start of June. And of course, the squad is going to be announced on Tuesday afternoon. So we're going to look at that. It doesn't feel very much like cricket weather at the moment. Or perhaps it does. Perhaps this is cricket weather in the UK. I mean, it's been grim, hasn't it, for the last few days or so. And the forecast this week is not particularly good. Having said that, I am looking forward to Gloucestershire against Somerset on Thursday. Spectators allowed back for that match at the Bristol County Ground, and it's a top two clash in the second league, the Division Two, if you like, or Group Two of the County Championship. I see Essex have reasserted themselves in that tight Group One with a victory. So, you know, they were in a slightly dodgy position, but there's time for them to catch up, and they've caught up there top of the table with Durham. And well done to Scott Borthwick's team. We had Scott on right at the start of the season. He was so excited about the possibility of Durham competing in the County Championship, you know, with the chance to win it. And they are in the top two as things stand. And then it's the Old Firm in Group Three, Yorkshire and Lancashire, the top two. There, Joe Root in the runs against Glamorgan, out for 99. I don't know if you saw it, Yoz. He was looking to run it away for a single down towards third man, a sort of typical Root shot. I don't know whether it just came in a fraction and he got an inside edge onto his stumps, out for 99. But some form for Joe Root with the selectors. I say the selectors, I mean, it's the coach, isn't it, now, who's going to responsibility for the team and team selection. Ed Smith having been dismissed or removed from his job or whatever, or, you know, parted company or a different selection formula for the future, whatever, you know, underscore or cross out, whichever one of those you want to do so. So what are we looking at? It seems to me the big problem that England have got is the fact that all their all-rounders who balance the side are not going to be available. I'm thinking Ben Stokes, who you're going to see this week, Chris Wokes, Sam Curran, and if you want a spinning all-rounder, Moeen Ali. So they've used those all-rounders to balance the side in recent years, but none of them will be available. So are they looking at six batsmen, a wicketkeeper, and four bowlers? And if they're looking at only four bowlers, are they looking at just four pace bowlers and no spinner for the first test at Lord's? I mean, it's certainly possible, especially the way actually Lord's has played so far this year. I see Middlesex done again inside 3 days by Hampshire, as they were done by Gloucestershire last weekend. The ball sort of nipped around at Lord's. Lord's used to, just on Lord's, we've talked about selection a moment ago. Lord's used to be, at the start of the 21st century, Lord's was so flat for test cricket. I mean, you could get some big scores there. You really did book in. But it seems to me in recent years, I know they've had a change of groundsman. In recent years, the ball has nipped, and there's something there for the pace bowlers. What's all that about?
Well, that's a really good point. And funnily enough, I went out to the middle at Lord's last week before their match with Hampshire to have a look at the pitch. And in fact, I chatted to Kyle, the groundsman as well, the Irish groundsman. And yeah, I don't think anybody can really answer that question. I've talked to a few of the ground staff, you know, why is it, you know, nipping around here so much? And they sort of say, well, it's the slope that helps any kind of slight lateral movement. It's always had a slope, but I think with a bit of grass on the wicket as well, on the pitch, I think that just assists movement. And there's a lot of sort of hearsay about the fact that the drainage at Lord's is so good that they have to flood it all the time on the outfield. Otherwise, the outfield dries out too quickly. And if you flood the outfield, then obviously that moisture gets under the square and under the surface of the pitch and helps the pitch move around. It's a difficult one to answer. I mean, the square looks incredibly lush, you know, beautiful covering of grass. The pitch for the Hampshire match, I saw it on, I think, Tuesday, a couple of days before the game. It was the colour of a billiard table. You know, and they were obviously going to cut it down, but there's a lot of live grass there at the moment. And I guess that may be the reason. A lot of skillful operators, you know, the people like Kyle Abbott and Mohammed Abbas and obviously Tim Murta, who are all extremely good at using the seam, the proud seam of the Duke's ball. I think it's a combination of a slightly overcast weather, which obviously helps the bowlers. Bit of extra grass on the pitch, the slope as well. Maybe poor technique of batsmen.
Lights on as well.
Lights on. You know, it's a combination of factors, but there's no doubt the Middlesex batting order is very low on confidence and not that high on ability at the moment.
OK, let's have a look at the selection options for those picking the England squad. So, I mean, they are missing a few. I mentioned that the all-rounders that are missing, no Butler or Bairstow as well, and no Jofra Archer because he's injured. Dom Sibley has not been playing for Warwickshire for a month because of a broken finger. I think the feeling is he is going to come back against Essex this week. So whether they'll pick him, you know, and then include him if he's fit or, you know, subject to form and fitness. We'll wait and see. I mean, there is one obvious option to play at the top of the order, and that's James Bracey, who's had a good start to the season with Gloucestershire, was in the biosecure bubble last winter, and they do like him, and he's come out with 478 runs at 53 so far this season. So there's the option at the top of the order, but are they looking at Bracey and Sibley, or are they looking at Bracey and Burns and say to Sibley, you have to prove your fitness and your form? I mean, is Burns' place under threat? He didn't play, of course, in the last Test match that England played. So I suspect what will happen is that they'll pick all of them. They'll pick Burns, they'll pick Bracey, and they'll pick Sibley. And, of course, they'll pick Zach Crawley as well, and then make a decision further down the line. Is that how you would see it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll have to see whether Sibley, you know, regains a bit of confidence and so on after his injury. So I guess, you know, first choice would probably be Sibley, Burns and Crawley at three. But if, say, Sibley doesn't look convincing or is struggling a bit, then they play Crawley as opener and Bracey at three. I would have thought that would be the most likely prospect. It's good
even
to see
though that Bracey that, opens for even though Bracey has been opening for Gloucestershire and Crawley's been batting at three for Kent. I mean, Bracey's also batted at three for Gloucester. He's opened and he's batted at three for Gloucestershire. So
yeah, the last innings I saw him play was batting at three. I guess he'll bat at three. Yeah. Crawley, it's good to see he's back in the runs. I watched a little bit of a duel between him and Ollie Robinson down at Hove the other day. And it was just, sometimes you look at county cricket and it looked a little bit moribund and you know, a little bit moderate but at times. But that was high class, a really top-notch batsman standing up to a fiery and very accurate pace bowler. I really like Robinson. And if you look at his record, I mean, he's got nearly 300 wickets at 21 in county cricket. I mean, that's a really impressive record. And what I like about him is he's got, we were talking on this show before about some bowlers who don't have that sort of mean approach and mean attitude. You know, they run up and bowl. In a way, someone like Mark Wood is quite a sort of fun-loving kind of character. He's not someone that you think when you face him, he's not going to give me anything to hit. Mark Wood is the sort of bowler who will bowl you an absolute jaffer and obviously very, very fast, but will give you sort of balls to hit. But someone like Robinson, you feel is just at you all the time, rumbling in down that hill at Hove, just keeping that ball around about the off stump, just slightly back of a length with a nasty bouncer up his sleeve and a little bit of out movement, hits the seam hard, bowls, you know, what everybody calls a heavy ball. It jams into the top of the splice and bruises that sort of join between your thumb and forefinger, which grips the bat. And he just doesn't let the batsman get away. And I really like that attitude. In fact, he reminded me, watching him a little bit, of Pat Cummins, the way he bowls, possibly around the same speed and the same sort of intent and desire and sort of almost relentlessness, which really sort of speaks well for his future.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's quite as quick as Cummins. Not what I've seen. He's a bit down on that. But he you're right. He does have that sort of at the batsman strong action. He's picked up 29 wickets already, and you mentioned his record. I think the word is that you know, Robinson is going to be in there, and there's every chance that he's going to make his Test match debut at Lord's against New Zealand. I mean, not least because they are down on bowlers. And what are the other options? Well, the other options are, of course, the old firm of Anderson and Broad. So England's four. Say they do play four and they don't play a spinner at Lord's. The four, Anderson, Broad, Robinson. And then you've got Overton, Stone, Ollie Stone. I mean, he's not played since early May. And Mark Wood, so that, you know, they do have those options. Overton's the leading wicket taker in the country with 32. He can bat a bit as well. The tail looks a bit long, it has to be said. If you Anderson, Broad, Robinson, and say Wood, they do have one or two problems, England, for this New Zealand Test series. So yeah, it looks good for Robinson, and it is an opportunity to have a look at him. And you'd think he might well be ahead of someone like Overton. Stone hasn't played perhaps as much as they would have liked, although of course he did play that Test match, you know, and played well in the winter in India. And then there's Mark Wood. So pick four out of those seven.
Well, yeah, it's good. It's six. A good option, isn't it? It's they've got lots of options.
Four from six, it looks to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think whoever they pick, they'll have a good attack, I think. The problem, as you say, is the batting, really. Whether Broad and Anderson will play, they'll do a sort of rotation like they have done in recent times and play one and then have a Wood as a pace. They definitely need a sort of a Wood as a quick bowler. I would like to see Robinson and Anderson play together. Because I'm sure that Jimmy could have a huge influence on Robinson, and you know, it's almost passing on the baton, isn't it? I think, slightly. He's a different, slightly different type of bowler, but using the same sorts of ingredients, giving the batsman nothing, basically, and trying to make the ball move away, mostly. So, yeah, I'd like to see Wood, Anderson and Robinson, and then a fourth, possibly Overton, who would be add some strength to the batting.
So you're leaving out Stuart Broad again from the first test match of the summer?
Yeah, well, I mean, then I'd play him in the second test.
Yeah,
I think you've got to... They've got five tests against India to come as well. Mm. So it's very difficult, isn't it? It's an embarrassment of riches to have both of them. You know, these two test matches don't count for anything much, except, you know, pride, obviously. So it is a good opportunity to try one or two younger bowlers who haven't played as much. I would, you know, we want to hold Broad and Anderson back in a way for the India series.
Okay, so there's your four. Leach seems to have gone ahead of Bess as the spinner. So if England were to play a spinner, if they'd got to Lords in early June and found out actually, oh, lo and behold, suddenly it's dry and you know, we do need to play a spinner, then you feel Jack Leach ahead of Dom Bess. You'd think anyway. That seems to be that, you know, the feeling that he's moved ahead of him. So that's your bowling options. Folks to keep wicket, presumably. I mean, there's no Joss Butler, so does it have to be Ben Folkes? I mean, Bracey does keep wicket, so that gives you another option. But you know, having given Folkes a go in the winter, and you know, the feeling is that he's such a good gloveman that you know he has to play. So Folkes is your wicketkeeper batting at seven. You've got that Burns, Bracey, Sibley, Crawley, three of those four at the top. And then it seems to me probably the other three, the four, five and six, pick themselves, Root, Pope and Lawrence, as things stand.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see anything changing that or not?
No, I don't. No, and Lawrence can bowl a few off breaks, can't he? I know they're not the best, but they're useful. Also, Root can bowl. So they've got some spin options there, sort of part-time spin options. Yeah, I like the look of that, actually. And they've got to use this opportunity. They've got to try and find out a bit about one or two other players, you know, for the sort of bigger challenges ahead. So, I think a good opportunity.
Yeah.
By the way, we just mentioned that, of course, all those players that you mentioned are not available because they were at the IPL. Some inside knowledge from, you know, the IPL kind of fraternity is that it's not likely to be resumed, this tournament. I think they're just going to cancel it.
Really?
Because it's just too difficult to fit it in. And there's too many logistical issues and lack of players. And it's just proving to be too difficult. Obviously, they can't play it in India because of the COVID situation. They've got to find somewhere else to go. They could go to the UAE, but just getting all the players there and all the kind of possible quarantine that may still be required, England players not available, other players have just come out of series. It's just looking too difficult. So they might just have to ride it off.
Yeah, well, that's a massive financial loss for them, isn't it? When you think about it, hindsight's a great thing, but there was the option, wasn't it, of playing it again in the UAE. And it seems to me there's one that if they'd taken that, they wouldn't have had the same problems as they come up against. Anyway, there we go. They wanted to play it in India. It didn't work out. Just going back to England, Yoz, Hamid, we haven't mentioned him, 450 runs at 56. Of course, he has had a bit of exposure to international cricket. He's had a really poor time of it, but he's done well at the start of this summer. I mean, is the feeling there, let's see how that progresses, let's see what you can come up with for a season or two or whatever, and then possibly go again if it works for him at Notts?
Well, yeah, I think what I would like to see with him is him face up to some top fast bowlers. And I'm not aware of who he's faced particularly so far, but I want him to face some 90-mile-hour bowlers on some hardish pitches, because ultimately, you know, if you're thinking about him, say, for the Ashes, he's got to be able to play off the back foot against the ball rising up into the ribs and, or, you know, sort of above the waist. And that's an area that, to me, hasn't proved. I'm not saying he can't do it, but because he's had issues with things like broken fingers from playing a bit low, I would just be slightly concerned about that. So I'd like to see him score runs against some really good quick bowlers. I'm not saying that he hasn't, and I'm not saying that he can't, but I'd like to just see a bit more evidence of that. And obviously, he's a very classy talent.
Mm. Not many of them around, though. That's the problem, isn't it? In county cricket, those sort of 90-mile-an-hour bowlers, you think of Stone, you think of Wood, there aren't stacks of them around, though. Anyway, well, I mean, there's Jofra Archer as well, who I saw get Zach Crawley out with a decent ball in that match down at Hove. Mm. Jofra Archer, elbow injury, out of the New Zealand series. I saw you put on social media the other day that, you know, it was an injury that you had, and it did reduce your speed from, from 60 miles an hour down to, to 48 miles an hour, wasn't it?
Well, it's funny because it is slightly relevant story because when I first came onto the scene, I had a quite alarmingly hyperextendable right elbow, which at times made it look as if I chucked. In fact, when I loosened up, sometimes people would say to me, don't loosen up like that, or loosen up with your your shirt button down or something, because it looks as if you're throwing when you're loosening up, because I had such a hyperextension. And that definitely gave me an extra two, three mile an hour of pace. So I think in my first couple of years, I might have bowled, 85 plus, but I then had quite a bad injury. I was actually tripped playing football, that lovely sport that all cricketers, of course, enjoy playing. Fell on my elbow and it actually went back in the wrong way too far. So it hyperextended sort of backwards into itself. And I was out of action for 2 months. And after that, I could never properly straighten my elbow again. I couldn't even straighten it, never mind hyperextend it. And I definitely lost just that sort of little bit of edge of speed, which you get from that snap of the elbow. And I've looked at Jofra's action, and he gets that exceptional hyperextension as well, which just gives him that extra bit of whip. And unfortunately, he's got some kind of fairly chronic injury inside the elbow. I'm not entirely sure what it is, but I reckon it's something to do with the ligaments. And medical science is so much better now than in the 1980s, and it may be that they find a remedy for it. But it certainly, I never was cured of it, and it kept kind of nagging away at me. And it does inhibit your speed, undoubtedly. So I just hope they do find some kind of... what you can do now is, with lots of these sort of joint injuries, is inject new cartilage into them, and that smooths the passage, the movement of the joint, and can ultimately cure you for a while.
Well, underlying for a while, though, I mean, that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, Jofra's quite young, isn't he, to be having what you've described there as, potentially a chronic injury. I suppose how worried should England supporters be about Jofra Archer's fitness for the Ashes? Because, I mean, that's what England are targeting, and they have been.
I'd say quite worried. Yeah. I'd say quite worried because, you have to bowl a lot of overs in the Ashes, don't you? And you can't have a bowler who can only bowl 10 overs in a day. And the wear and tear on that, The pressure you put on that joint in the same way as you do on your knees and ankles as well, it never goes away. And, those hard grounds in Australia jarring all your bones, and you're making your teeth rattle as well. It's a very, very demanding environment to bowl in. If you're not fully fit, you can't really handle it.
Yeah. I mean, England have been looking at having those three fast bowlers available for the Ashes, Archer, Stone and Wood. But they've all had their fitness issues over time. So we'll see what happens when the music stops. Whether you do think about musical chairs, is it going to be any chair for a fast bowler to sit down upon when it comes to the first test in Brisbane, whenever that is? They haven't actually released a schedule. That is due fairly soon, isn't it? But it has been pushed back slightly this time. That's my understanding, that the Ashes will start a bit later because of the T20 World Cup that precedes it and allow the teams to prepare for it, and the talk of it going right into January this time, as it has done on previous tours way back when. But there has been a formula over the last few years where they start in Brisbane in November. But that might not necessarily be the case this time round. Talking about Australia, Yozza, another story this week, an interview that Cameron Bancroft gave to Donald McRae of The Guardian, where he used the term about that ball tampering 3 years ago in South Africa. He said it's, you know, whether, you know, other bowlers were knew about it or were involved, and he used the phrase self-explanatory. It was one of those where you sort of, you'd like to be sort of eavesdropping on the interview, really, to sort of know the context, quite how he said it, how reticent he was. I mean, I think there was a pause, and he was asked twice, you know, the same question. So did the bowlers know? Because, of course, that was one of the things, isn't they? Say, oh, it was, you know, it was really up to, you know, Smith and Warner and Bancroft. They were the ones really involved, and the bowlers sort of, you know, didn't really have much to do with it or knew anything about it. And Bancroft, perhaps just sort of, he's just lifting the box lid a little bit there and saying, well, you know, I mean, as probably, you know, if you think about it, you draw the conclusion that more people than just those three knew about it. I mean, for a start, you're going to bowl with the ball, aren't you, as a bowler?
Mm. Look, no bowlers will be totally ignorant of what is going on. You can't have a team with a batsman trying to scratch the ball, whatever he was doing, and the bowlers not be aware of it at least, because they would, for a start, you know, they, in a way, you'd have to expect the bowlers to agree to it, actually. I mean, why would you, as a batsman, do something like that? You know, you polish the ball to help the bowlers, and the bowlers know which member of the team is the best polisher, and so he has control of the ball, and it's in the interest of the bowler in the end. So the same would apply to any other manipulation of the ball. The bowlers would... I've never heard of a team where somebody is doing something to the ball that the bowlers don't approve of. So it does rather open the lid, lift the lid on it, doesn't it? You know, there were lots of rumours about what were the Aussie bowlers doing to the ball during that Ashes series that preceded the series in Cape Town and South Africa. I don't know. I mean, it's a bit of a can of worms, isn't it? Because bowlers have always been very good at just subtle use of their fingernail or a little bit of roughness, a zip on their trousers, or, you know, a seam on their trousers or something, just to kind of help exacerbate the natural wear and tear of a ball. And clearly, if you think about it, I suppose logically, bowlers all know that the cameras are on them all the time, so they are unlikely to be trying anything on. So I suppose trying to extrapolate from what may have happened, give a batsman who is less likely to be focused on by the cameras the job, whoever decided it is difficult to say. But the idea is, if you give the batsman the job, which has been approved by the bowlers, he's less likely to be picked up by cameras. Of course, they got that horribly wrong, and it was picked up. But yeah. I would just imagine that the bowlers would have known about it, yes. Mm.
So it happened, you know, what, 3 years ago now. Warner, Smith and Bancroft have served their punishments. Is it one of those things where it's quite an interesting story, but actually, you know, it's been dealt with. They were punished. They were the ones who were caught committing the crime, in inverted commas. Just move on. But probably keep a watching eye in the future. Is it simple as that, or is it one of those things that needs to be revisited?
I don't think so. I think the culprits were caught and punished, and they, you know, the punishments were quite severe, and they've learned their lesson. And in a way, ball tampering, for want of a better term, is as old as the hills, and it will carry on. Bowlers will find a way of doing something to the ball to make it move in the air, and who will deny them that? It keeps the game interesting.
Yeah, well, there are those who think that it should actually be some form of tampering or whatever, as it's seen at the moment, should be legal, that the bowler should be given something back. They should be allowed to do that. Anyway,
it certainly shouldn't jeopardise Steve Smith's hopes of getting the captaincy again. I was very critical of him at the time, and saying how sort of poor judgment, how his judgment was so poor in that scenario, and that he should never captain again. I've changed my mind on that, because I've got to know Steve a little bit now, and you know, I see what dedication he has to the game and to his team, and also the total embarrassment, humiliation, and sort of heartache he suffered after that. Here's a guy who all he's ever wanted to do is bat for Australia and make as many runs as possible in the interest of the team. You know, he was quite young as captain. He was a bit naive. He's in that sort of cricketing bubble where at times you're a bit detached from reality. So, all those things can be used as a sort of mitigating arguments for a guy who made a horrible mistake, suffered a terrible punishment, but is actually a really decent bloke. And I'd love to see him be captain of Australia again.
So done the crime, done the time, move on.
Be a little bit, let's have a bit of forgiveness, really. So talking of Australia people who starred out there, we had Alan Lamb in our virtual cricket club last week. You couldn't make it, actually, could you? Because you were busy. But he was hilarious, Lammy, as you'd expect, with lots of sort of mad anecdotes about life on tour and so on. And he spoke because he was... We played, actually, the brilliant over in which he stole victory against Australia in Sydney. 18 to win off the last over, Bruce Reid bowling, and he managed to get the runs off five balls. And he actually told the lovely story about how there was one ball in the middle of that over where he kind of rather clothed it to deep extra cover, and Dirk Wellham fielded the ball and threw it back, and they could only run one, which would have put Philip de Freitas on strike. But Lamb, quite craftily, feigned as if he was going to go back for the second, and then realised he couldn't, and sort of stayed at the non-striker's end and sort of put his bat back into the crease as the throw was arriving at the bowler's end. And it sort of, almost accidentally on purpose, he got slightly in the way of the bowler receiving the throw, and the bowler missed the ball and they got an overthrow. So it was possibly contrary to the spirit of the game, although I don't think he was entirely deliberate. And they got the overthrow, and then he managed to hit the winning runs. But Lammy is a brilliant character, of course. And here's just a little extract from his visit to the Virtual Cricket Club, talking about life on tour with Beefy.
I think probably the best night out is probably the America's Cup with Beefy, Embry, Lamb and Gower. Ended up going to the Whitehorse clubhouse the night before the Western Australia game against England in Perth. And we had a rather big bender in there. And Beefy was arm wrestling one of the guys and fell over and broke this big coffee table and wasn't injured at all, but was struggling to walk. And the following day, we had to bat, and Gower got naught, Lamb got naught, and Beefy went into bat, and he was halfway out there, and he didn't have a bat, so the 12th man had to run out and give him the bat and say, "I think this might help you, Beefy."
One of the things you remember most about Lammy is batting against the West Indies, wasn't it? At the time when they were the preeminent bowling force in the world, he stood up to them and scored hundreds against them. It was
600s, it was actually. 600 stuff, he scored against them. Yeah. It was thrilling stuff. It was absolutely brilliant. And in fact, we did also play a clip during the evening of his innings at Lord's against that West Indies team. And the bowling attack was Patrick Patterson, Courtney Walsh, Kirtley Ambrose and Malcolm Marshall. And they were all tearing to the wicket. I don't think I've ever seen Courtney Walsh run so fast. Patrick Patterson's like the Incredible Hulk. Malcolm Marshall hairing in off that curved run and bowling those fizzing bouncers and then coming round the wicket. When he goes round the wicket to a right-hander, you can't see him because he's quite small, and he runs up right behind the umpire and then pops out at the last moment to hurl it down from round the wicket. I mean, to be able to make hundreds against those bowlers was an immense achievement. I mean, he puts it down to an ability to pull and cut and a sort of fearlessness as well. He said he never feared failure. He found any selection for England as a bit of a bonus. He'd never sort of thought about that. Clearly, growing up in South Africa and then coming to England to play for North Ants, he'd never really thought about playing Test cricket. So every Test match he played was an extra sort of fillip in his cap, feather in his cap, really. And he loved facing those fast bowlers, and they actually, I think, massively respected him.
Slightly different character in the Virtual Cricket Club this week. You've got the boss man this week.
Yes, who did play a bit of cricket himself. In fact, Alan Lamb told him, and we're talking Tom Harrison here, Chief Executive of the ECB. Tom Harrison played a bit for Derbyshire and North Ants. And Lammy apparently told him when he saw him bat not to bother sticking around and find another career, which he did. He said it in a nice way. Which, of course, he has, and Tom has made a tremendous success of his life as the chief executive of the ECB. Not everybody's a supporter of some of the things he's done, but he's done it mostly for the or entirely for the good of the game. And so we've got him on the Virtual Cricket Club on Wednesday night, which allows anybody to ask a question of Tom Harrison, get the lowdown on the state of the ECB's finances, their aspirations for the future. Obviously, all the criteria behind the 100, you can ask him anything you like if you join our club, worldsbestcricketclub.com, £6 a month to join. And we have a very special guest next week, after this Wednesday week, we have, and who is it, Simon?
I think you're talking about Sunil Gavaskar.
We're talking Sunil Gavaskar, who has written a very funny letter to the Cricketer in counter to Vic Mark's story about something he wrote in the Cricketer last month. They played together for Somerset a few times. And Sunny said he wanted to write a letter in response to Vic's article. And I said, well, while you're doing so, can you join our Virtual Cricket Club? And he said, oh, I'd love to. So he's in the club from Mumbai on Wednesday, the 26th of May. But this Wednesday, it's Tom Harrison. And as I say, you can join us by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. So hope to see you there, and we'll speak to you again after that.
Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.